Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about today one of my favorite stories as a kid, and one of the most well-known stories in the Gospels at all, and that's the feeding of the 5,000. I don't remember when I first heard the story of the feeding of the 5,000, but I remember as a kid thinking, that must have been awesome, right? I mean, and I put myself as the kid, you know, of course, my sack lunch wasn't loaves and fishes, which we'll talk about in a minute. It was, you know, peanut butter jelly and an oatmeal cream pie and maybe some chips and a Jell-O cup. So I'm not sure what that would have looked like, you know, if Jesus would have PB&J sandwiches for everybody, I guess, maybe, you know, Jell-O cups, you know, some oatmeal pies. That wasn't y'all's lunch as a kid. Y'all didn't have that. That was mine. Man, I tell you what, oatmeal cream pie. I haven't had one in years. I really can't have them now or shouldn't have them now. But I'm telling you what, and I don't like the big ones, you know, there's the regular size ones and then there's the big ones. It's just the ratios are not the same as it is with the small ones for some reason. The small ones are better. So they should make a sugar-free version of that. So if anybody sees that, y'all pick me up. I'll get you back later. Although I'm sure it would taste terrible. But anyway, fabulous story today. It was obviously, the feeding of the 5,000 story is obviously, or was obviously, very popular in Jesus' time or the time right after Jesus as well, when the authors of the Gospels are writing the Gospels, because this is the only miracle that is in all four Gospels. So it was hugely important for the people in post-Jesus to remember and write down this story, just as it was for me as a kid, you know, growing up at church, putting myself in the shoes of the little kid who gave his lunch. You know, that was, I thought it was pretty cool, you know. It must have been great. And so today we're going to talk about that story. And so here's what we're going to do. We'll read three or four verses at the time, and then we'll kind of stop and make some comments. Because the point of the story is fairly obvious, right? Jesus takes a kid's lunch and feeds a bunch of people, right? So it's clearly a miracle. There's a few little points in that I want to make as we read through that kind of give a little more color to the story. Then at the end, we'll kind of wrap up with some, here's the three main things. And as we talk about the three main things, we'll apply them one at a time versus separating those out, okay? So that's how we're going to roll today. All right, so we'll read about three verses, I believe, to begin with. Stop and make some comments, and we'll kind of go through it like that. All right, here we go. John 6, 1. After this, so that's after Chapter 5, what all happened in chapter 5? In Jerusalem, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. So, kind of the same name, just two different names, same place. And a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. We'll stop right there. All right, so last week, if you'll remember, or the last 3 weeks, Jesus was in Jerusalem. Remember, he healed the guy at the Pool of Bethesda, and then they end up in the temple, and that's how the story kind of ends. And then Jesus gives this long discourse, which we looked at over the last 2 weeks, presumably in the temple area, and at some point Jesus leaves. And so today we find Jesus back in Galilee. That's kind of his home, a base of operations. And he's around the Sea of Galilee. Now, if you want to read a little more context on this, you can read Mark 5 and 6. So Mark chapter 5, Mark chapter 6. Give us a little bit of background of what was happening before or in between Jerusalem and Jesus on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. The background is that Jesus has tremendous success in ministry in Galilee. I mean, people are in droves coming to Jesus. Jesus goes back to preach a sermon in his hometown of Nazareth, and nobody likes it. And that's the whole where the whole line that's repeated throughout the Bible, a prophet is without honor in his own hometown. And so basically nobody likes Jesus in Nazareth, right? And so he leaves. Shortly after that, though, Jesus commissions his disciples to go out and to do ministry and to heal the sick and to cast out demons and all this kind of stuff. and they are wildly, I would probably a better word, miraculously successful. And so people, again, in droves are coming to Jesus. And so it is probably that Jesus, who at that time was on the west side of the Sea of Galilee, travels to the east side of the Sea of Galilee to get away from the crowd so that he and his disciples can have some time just with him and the 12. The side of that Jesus is on the east side of the Sea of Galilee is not where Jesus does a lot of ministry. Most of his ministry is on the west half, but he's still in Jewish territory. This today, where Jesus is at today, is in what we term the Golan Heights. That's where he's at. Okay, so Jesus is in the Golan Heights, and he's there with his disciples, and he's trying to sit down and teach them. Right, and so that's kind of the setup for what's going to happen in the rest of the story. Now, let's read verse 4, and then we'll talk about it very briefly, because we're going to talk about it more later. Now, John breaks the flow of the passage, or the story, to insert this one little verse, which seems odd, but is hugely important, and we're going to talk about that kind of at the very end of our time today. Now, the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. So you just need to remember that, okay? Just keep that in mind. And John's going to tell us the story. All right, so let's read verses 5 and following. Now, all right, lifting up his eyes, then, and seeing a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? Verse 6. He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. So that's kind of a confusing with a bunch of he's and himself. Jesus already knew what he was going to do. Philip answered to him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. All right, here we go. So you see the setup? Jesus has left the crowd to be with his disciples. But guess what? The crowd follows him. They find out where he's at, and they follow him to the other side. Okay? Now, why are they following him? Well, they're following him not because they think Jesus is the Christ, but because Jesus has done a lot of miracles. Right? You remember several weeks ago when we were in that first four chapters of John, that kind of called the Cana cycle, and one of the distinguishing points of the Cana cycle that we learned is that there's a difference between miracle faith and faith according to Jesus. And if you remember, miracle faith is, I got to see the miracle, then I'll believe. Where Jesus says, you got to believe first, then you may get to see the miracle. Guess what? These people are still over here. Many of them, as you can well imagine, are there for the show. They're there to be mesmerized and wowed. What's going to happen today? Who is he going to heal? Now, granted, some of them are probably there with legitimate concerns. Some of them probably have loved ones that they are trying to get to Jesus to be healed. But the vast majority of the crowd that's clear throughout John is there to see the show. What's going to happen next? It's not that they believe that Jesus is the Christ or that Jesus is the Messiah, which we will see at the end of this chapter in several weeks. They're there to be wowed. And so the crowd follows Jesus, and they got a problem, right? Mark tells us it gets late in the day. Jesus ends up teaching them, and it gets late in the day, and everybody's hungry. I mean, have you been with kids and not fed them for long? You know what happens. They turn into gremlins and they become mean and ugly. At least ours do. They get hangry. You know, it's like that Snickers commercial. That's real life. I used to think that was fake. It's not. It's real. And so the people there, they need food. And so Jesus decides to give a little test, a pop quiz to Philip. Now, why does he pick on Philip? Well, if you'll remember back to the beginnings of John's gospel, John gives us a little side note that Philip is from Bethsaida. Guess where Bethsaida is? On the east side of the Sea of Galilee in the Golan Heights. And so Philip knows the region. That's from his area. That would be like someone from Tennessee, Alabama, or South Carolina coming here and saying, hey, where can I get some good food? Well, why would they ask you and not the people they traveled with? Because the people they traveled with ain't from that side of the Sea of Galilee. They're from the region. And so he asked Philip. Now, Jesus already knows what he's going to do. So this is to see where Philip is at. This is a pop quiz to see if Philip's kind of got it yet. Unfortunately, Philip ain't got it yet. Because he gives a very true and realistic answer, but one that does not acknowledge Jesus' ability, power, or greatness in any way, shape, or form, even though he's already seen that on display from time to time. Philip says that 200 denarii worth of bread. Now, that doesn't make any sense to us. We don't know how much that is. Let me put it in modern day terms. That is 8 months worth of salary. So quickly, do the math. Whatever you make in 8 months, that's how much money it would. Now, I know we all make different amounts, but just contextually. 8 months. So 2/3 of the year's worth of labor that you get paid for would only provide enough bread for each person to get a small one bite morsel. Because what does he say? For each of them to get a little. So we're not even talking, they're not even going to have enough nourishment. They're not even going to get close to being filled up. They're just going to get a fragment of a piece. Right now, that's a problem too. Because if you've ever been hungry, and then you're like, you get one bite, and guess what? You get more angry because you ate something, but it didn't fill you up. So this is a big deal, right? So, verse 8. So one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, if you'll notice throughout the gospel, Andrew is always bringing people to Jesus. Just a little side note. Said to him, there's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many? All right, let's stop right there. Now, a couple things. When I think of barley loaves, all right, let's read verse 10 first. Let's read verse 10 first. Jesus said, so here's what he tells Philip, tells the rest of the disciples. Have the people sit down. Now, there was much grass in the place, so it's probably March, April, the grass is green. So the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Okay, so here's the deal. Philip says 8 months worth of salary will allow this large of a group to only have a small morsel. Andrew brings up a kid who has 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, there's a couple things about these loaves. When I think of loaves of bread, I think of the bread aisle at Walmart. You know, the giant loaf, Sunbeam. We get the Walmart bread just because it's cheaper. But anyway, I know some of y'all are bougie and like the name brand bread. And so you get the giant loaf, right? And it's like this. That kid was not carrying around 5 loaves of Sunbeam, giant loaf, right? He was carrying around these. And they may not have even been this big. This bag said it was supposed to have 5, but it only had 4. I feel like I got gypped a little bit here. This is a pita, right? I did taste it quite early. It's cardio healthy too. I'm not sure he had those in his day, but it's pretty good. You know, it's not great, but it's pretty good. This is more like what the kid had. And they may not even been this big. Because for a kid to eat 5 this size, I'm not sure. Well, some of our kids might be able to. But, oh, there's the 5th one. It was hidden. So they didn't jip me. I feel better now. So, but it was like this. It was, y'all laugh, it was hidden in here. I promise, I counted it like 3 times. Anyway, keep going. So he had bread shaped like this, maybe not even this big, but that's a big difference in 5 loaves, the way we think of loaves, correct? That's a lot less bread. It's this, okay? Flat, pretty small. I mean, maybe enough for a kid. It was kind of like a sack lunch. I was going to bring some fish in, but I didn't figure y'all wanted to smell sardines or help me hold up 2 live brim. But that's about what he had. Like 2 3 finger brim. You know, you've been brim fishing. Not one of those big honkers that you got to hold with your hand up to your chest area. But like 3 little finger brim, right? They were probably pickled, which sounds disgusting, or they were salted. And that was a traditional dish that they ate in that time, was pickled or salted fish and bread. And that's what the boy had. Now, how many people does the passage say? 5,000 what? Men, right? Because that's who got counted that day. Sorry, ladies. Conservative scholars have estimated that there quite possibly could have been as many as 20,000 people there that day. So somewhere between 5,000 and 20,000 is how many people are there that day. And Andrew says, two-thirds of a year's salary only gives people that much. And then Andrew's like, hey, I don't know, but here's a kid who's got five pitas and two small brim. What you gonna do? I mean, do you see like the juxtaposition of there's this great crowd and we have virtually nothing? How is this all going? How are you going to feed? And then Jesus tells them to have everybody sit down. Like, hey, what? Sit down for what? I mean, you know somebody's thinking it. Like, why are we sitting down? I'm tired. I got hungry kids running around. The disciples are telling people to sit down in groups of 50 to 100, Mark tells us. And they've got to be wondering, what in the world is he thinking of today? Like, we got five pieces of bread and two brim. Like, what's going on? Well, let's read. All right, let's keep going. Verse 11 through 13. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he thanked God for the bread and the fish. He distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, here's the key, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the five barley loaves left by those who had eaten. Okay, now, can we just stop a minute? The guy that Jesus took, the boy had five barley loaves, poor man's bread, pita bread, and two small pickled or salted fish. And Jesus has everybody sit down. He thanks God for the minuscule meal. And then somehow the disciples start distributing this food out. And what does it say? Somewhere between 5,000 and 20,000 people ate as much as they wanted till they were full. Now I got a little curious, because that's a lot of food. A lot of food. So I did a little quick math and a Google search. The USDA says that the average American eats between 16 ounces and 26 ounces of food per meal. Okay? Now I know some of y'all probably eat less. Some of us obviously eat more than that, right? And so, but that's the average, 16 to 26 ounces. So, on the small end, if there's truly only 5,000 men there, and there's nobody, no ladies, no kids, no grandmamas, no aunts, just 5,000 men, that means on the small end, if they only ate 16 ounces, that Jesus would have created 2.5 tons of food. But wait, let's just assume, for sake, that there's 20,000 people and they ate 26 ounces. Because it's free food. It's like a free buffet. You eat as much as you want. Three hamburgers. You know, y'all know how y'all do. Kids especially. They're just going at it, right? Do you know how much food that would be for 20,000 people at 26 ounces? 16.25 tons. That's 32,000 pounds of food. So on the short end, there's 5,000 pounds. On the top end, there's 32,500 pounds. Like that. That is, like my mind was completely blown. Because like it's like you hear, hey, this many people. Have you ever been to an event where 20,000 people ate as much as they want? I've been to a lot of big eatings. I've never been to one that big. I mean, can you imagine the cooking it would take to feed 20,000 people as much as they wanted? On bread and fish? There's no, just bread and fish. That's a lot of fish. I mean, like, without a hesitation. And to make matters even more astonishing, there's leftovers. There's so much leftovers, they filled 12 baskets full. Now, you say, I don't know how big the baskets were. I don't know if they're like shallow ones or they're like deep. It doesn't matter. There's 12, and they're not like 12 baskets that have some in them. What is the total? 12 baskets full. Meaning the basket is legitimately full. So Jesus feeds up to 20,000 people as much as they want to eat and then still has leftovers for the disciples and himself. Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So naturally, verse 14 and 15. When the people saw the sign, here, all right, this is the question. Sorry, we only read like five words, but here's the question I had. At what point who's the first person in the group, and how many people does it take for somebody to go, hey, something strange is happening here. How they got all this food? Where they got? I didn't see no container ships. I mean, today, like you would ask the same, well, where are they storing all this stuff? I mean, how many people, was it the first group of 50 after he moved on from that and then went to the second one? Because it's not like Jesus has got pack mules back there with bread and fish in them. Like, how long did it take for the first person to go, when they saw the sign, I mean, hello, yes. When they saw the sign that he had done, they said, this is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world, you think? Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. Right? So you see what happens here? This is going to be a theme that we're going to see throughout John. At various times in various places, the crowd is going to want to take Jesus by force and make him king. But every single time, he slips away and does not allow that to happen. So the crowd has one objective for Jesus. Jesus has another. Okay? So, again, the story's pretty self-explanatory, right? Jesus does an amazing miracle. All right? So what can we learn? What are some points that we can take away? And how can we apply them to our lives? So I'm going to give you 3 points, and each one has a little bit of an application. Okay? So here we go. Number one, Jesus provides. Hello. I mean, he creates at minimum 2.5 tons of food, up to over 32,000 pounds of food, 16 tons of food. I mean, clearly Jesus provides. But here's the point I want you to see, okay? Here's the point I want you to see, is that even though Jesus provided such a great provision in such a unique way, this is the really the only, one of very few miracles where Jesus He does something for multiple people at multiple times. And this is the largest, even if it's 5,000, this is by far the largest miracle where the most people are affected in one swath. Usually Jesus' miracles are individualized for the person who's in need. And clearly Jesus is going to do some greater miracles than this. I mean, he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. But here Jesus affects up to 20,000 people at one time. But here's the point I want us to see today, is that even though there is such a great breadth of provision, Jesus' ability to provide is not diminished in one single bit. Because even though Jesus' power to create this excess of food, what happens? There's still more. Because there's still leftovers. And so what should that tell us today? What point can we gain from that? Jesus can do whatever Jesus needs to do, and his power is never diminished in any way, shape, or form. Jesus' power is not like your gas tank, which I don't know if mine's on like half empty the whole time now, right? That's not how Jesus' power works. It's not like if he does a miracle for this side of the crowd, well, you got to wait a couple days over here because he's got to recharge his batteries. And then y'all up here in the middle, y'all just out of luck for a week or two. That's not how Jesus' power works. So how should that inform the way that we live? What's the application for us? My gosh, if Jesus can feed 20,000 people and create tons and tons and tons of food and affect all of these people at one time, He can help you as well. And He can help you and you and you and you and you and you and me all at the same time, because that's what He does. He is a provider. And He can provide whatever you need in whatever circumstance you're in to help you get through that circumstance, to bring Him glory and you good all at the same time for each and every one of us. And all of our provision is going to be different. Now look, we may not need pita bread and pickled fish. In fact, I'd rather you keep your pickled fish. Okay? I've never had pickled fish, but they sound terrible. All right, so you can keep that. But you know what? I may need something else this week. And you may not need bread and fish, but you may need something else this week. And you over here may need something different. And Jesus, the point we see today for us of how we live is that we should trust Jesus to provide in every single circumstance we're in, because He can do it. Here's the second thing we learn, okay? The second thing we learn is that Jesus stands on His own. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is Jesus is not beholden to be what the crowd says or wants Him to be. How many men does it say John says were there? 5,000? I mean, you do realize that after feeding them to their full and having leftovers, what did they want to do? Make Him king? You realize with 5,000 men, He could have absolutely been made king like that? A Roman legion, the top tier military unit of that day, you know how many people are in it? 4,000 to 6,000. Basically, if Jesus would have wanted to, He has an entire legion of fighting forces at His command. He could have easily taken over East Sea of Galilee, Golan Heights, if He would have wanted to, in an instant. In fact, most historians say there wasn't even a stationed Roman legion anywhere in Judea or Galilee at the time. So guess what? There's only auxiliary forces. That's a few hundred people here or there. 5,000 men, upwards of 20,000 people. He has got a legitimate fighting force. And what does Jesus do? Withdraws to the mountains. Why? Because Jesus hasn't come to be king yet. Surely He is king. Come on, we know that. But He's come to be the Messiah, Savior, die on the cross, rise again on the third day. That's His mission. And He will not be swayed from His mission. So you say, how does that apply to us today? All right, now, come on. Come with me. Culture today, even church culture, is trying to make Jesus into somebody He's not. Jesus is not the woke hipster, right? Who's crusading the picket line or demeaning people on social media. That's not who Jesus is. Jesus is not the stoned out, carefree guy who's, whatever you want to do, dude. That's not Jesus either. But here, hold on. Now we realize that's not who Jesus is. But this next one's going to hit a little home to us, for some of us. Because Jesus isn't the camo-wearing, M60-carrying general at the head of the tank column ready to blow up all the pagans. Come on. That's not Jesus either. And many times, let's be real, that's who we want Jesus to be. We realize He's not the woke hipster, because that's not us. And we realize He's not the stoned out, do whatever you want to do God either, because you know He kind of gives us some commands. But man, sometimes we just want Jesus to roll in there with some tanks and some heavy artillery and just blow all the pagans out of the way. But that's not Jesus either. Because if that was Jesus, guess what He would have done? He would have taken the 5,000 men and stormed the capital and taken the place over by storm, but He doesn't do it, and He never does it. Now, there will be a day, Revelation is clear, one of John's other writings that we'll get to in coming years. Jesus does take over the place. In fact, he takes over the entire earth. But his mission right now is to be the Savior of the world. So what's the application for us? Be careful who you make Jesus out to be. Because just because you want Jesus to be a certain way doesn't mean he has to be that way. Nor does it mean he will be that way one day. Who Jesus is who the Bible describes him to be. Right? So just be careful. Now, here's the last thing. All right, so stay with me real quick, and we're almost done, because what I'm about to tell you is going to be significant for today, but it's also going to be significant for the upcoming weeks. Remember in verse 4, Miss Kathy, pull back up verse 4. This verse seems a little out of place, but this entire story sets us up for an entire conversation that revolves around this verse right here. Now, the Passover, the Feast of the Jews, was at hand. Remember I said a couple weeks ago that from John 5 to John 11, Jesus enters what is called the Passover cycle or the festival cycle, where Jesus does miraculous things at these Jewish festivals. Well, Jesus isn't at the Passover yet. It's before the Passover. But the Passover is huge in this story. Now, what is Passover? Passover is the Jewish celebration that happened every year in roughly the springtime of the year that commemorated what happens in Exodus, like the first 15 to 16 chapters of Exodus. And what happens specifically, though, the Passover is to commemorate the night that the Jews who were enslaved in Egypt took the lamb and they killed the lamb and they took the blood and they put it up on the doorpost and on the lintel and they ate a quick meal of unleavened bread and of roasted lamb and bitter herbs and whatever they could find real quick, because that night the Lord was going to send the final plague on Egypt and when all of the firstborn were killed in throughout the land of Egypt, except the ones who had the blood on their doors, and literally death passed over them. And then afterwards, the Egyptians came out and gave them gold and silver and stuff and said, get out of here. And then they get out and they get to the Red Sea. And you remember the Egyptian army's coming, and God does what? He parts the Red Sea and they walk on, notice the language, dry land, not muddy land, dry land. And they get to the other side, and then the Egyptian army is in the sea, and then the sea swallows them up. And then they get on the other side, and then guess what happens when they get on the other side? They get hungry. And what does God do for them? He gives them heavenly bread known as manna. What's Jesus done here? What season is it again? It's Passover. What's everybody there? Hungry. What does Jesus do? Gives them heavenly bread. Because I'm going to be honest with you, this right here ain't feeding. It ain't feeding me and you, much less 5 to 20,000 people and two small three-finger brim. But what does he do? He miraculously feeds the entire crowd. And this will become, and feel free to go ahead and read ahead, this will become the talking point for the rest of the chapter. Bread, heaven, Moses, the Exodus. And so what do we see today? What do we see today? I'm going to kind of give you a little foreshadowing of what we'll see in the next couple weeks. But Jesus, listen to me, Jesus is leading a new Exodus, not to a physical promised land, but Jesus is leading a new exodus of souls to a fulfilled, spirit-filled life. Right? Jesus is not coming to make an army. He's not coming to take over the capital by storm. He could have done all of those things. What is he doing? He's coming to transform the hearts, lives, and souls of the people there and of you and me today. Right? That's what he's leading. Jesus is leading a new exodus of people toward God, toward a spirit-filled life. And so the last point of application for us today is actually the challenge that we've got to answer, not just today, but each and every day. And it's this: are we following Jesus in this new exodus that he's on, of being dedicated to the Lord, of living a Spirit-filled life every day, and walking to the promised land of a more complete and fulfilled life in Christ. Because if we're not, then we're going to end up just like the people in this story that we'll read what they do next week, where they follow Jesus because they're hungry again. And if he created bread on one side and did a miracle, surely he can do it again. And Jesus is like, no, 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 y'all are missing the point. Right? So, Jesus can provide for you just like he did for these people. Jesus is his own person on a mission. And that may or may not coincide with what you and I want Jesus to be on mission about. And we need to get to where he is, not make him where we are. And then lastly, Jesus is leading a new exodus of hearts and lives and souls. And the question we've got to ask ourselves today and tomorrow and the next day is, are we following him in that journey? Because that is the only way that we will have a fulfilled spirit filled life. And that's the question that you've got to ask yourselves today.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.